Welcome to the Cancer Care Connect workshop. At this time, all participants are in a listen-only mode. During the workshop, you will hear from our panel of expert speakers. We will allow time for questions and comments following the presentation. Instructions will be given at that time. If anyone should require assistance during the workshop, please press star then zero on your touchtone telephone. As a reminder, this workshop is being recorded. I would like to introduce your moderator for today's workshop, Dr. Carolyn Messner, Senior Director of Education and Training at Cancer Care. Please go ahead.
Oh, thank you so much, Rob. And I too would like to welcome everyone to today's Cancer Care Connect Education Workshop for caregivers coping with your loved one's metastatic prostate cancer. And this is part two of living with metastatic prostate cancer. And today's program is supported by a grant from Genentech and an educational grant from Janssen Biotech, Inc., administered by Janssen Scientific Affairs, LLC. I really want to thank them for their support of today's program. Now, we have actually quite a few people on the program today. We have over 200 participants on the program today, and you come from all of the United States, from both urban, rural, suburban, and frontier communities. And we also have a number of international participants from Algeria, Canada, Colombia, Japan, Philippines, Taiwan, South America, and the United Kingdom. So it's a global call as well, and it's a credit to all of you that you've chosen to spend this next hour with us. And now it is my great pleasure to introduce our first speaker, my esteemed colleague, Dr. Susan Slovin. Dr. Slovin is attending physician, genitourinary oncology service, Sidney Kimmel Center for Prostate and Urologic Diseases, Memorial Sloan Kettering Cancer Center, Professor of Medicine, Department of Medicine, College of Cornell University. And Dr. Slovin will be addressing an overview of metastatic prostate cancer, the important role of the caregiver with the healthcare team, and working with the healthcare team to manage your loved one's pain, neuropathy, and discomfort. It's my pleasure now to turn this program over to my esteemed colleague, Dr. Slovin.
Thank you very much, Dr. Messner, and welcome to everyone. Dr. Messner just touched upon a variety of aspects that caregivers face, and very often I think people forget that we as physicians are also caregivers, and we sometimes suffer the same stresses and anxieties that the family members and patients often experience. We're worried about our patients, we're worried about how we can deliver good care, how do we break bad news, and how do we provide patients with another treatment if one treatment doesn't work. So I can tell you right now, in 2024, we are very fortunate to have life-prolonging therapies for patients who have brand new or what we call de novo metastatic prostate cancer, cancer that has gone beyond the confines of the prostate gland, as well as a multitude of life-prolonging therapies for patients who have failed conventional hormones over the course of a number of years. So there's no less than 8 different treatments, if you can imagine, for somebody newly diagnosed who has disease that may have spread to lymph nodes or bone. Everything is really based on a backbone of androgen deprivation therapy, or what we know as hormonal therapy, that reduces the body's testosterone level. And on that, you could add chemotherapy with the standard of care docetaxel. We could add on a variety of hormonal agents, including drugs known as enzalutamide, apalutamide, and abiraterone. And more recently, there is another drug that's coming for approval, which is called darolutamide, and it's part of what we call triplet therapy, where we add to the conventional hormonal backbone a drug called darolutamide along with chemotherapy. And we've done that in another approach with the same kind of combination, replacing darolutamide with a drug called abiraterone. Now, what makes all these so exciting is that we call this intensification. It's 3 drugs as opposed to 2 drugs. And while 2 drugs may be very reasonable, for most of our patients, sometimes we need to intensify the treatment for patients who might be symptomatic in some way or just not not doing well and failing to thrive. So we have alternatives, and of course the selection is really based on what your physician recommends to you. In the setting of what we call castration resistant, where somebody is no longer responding to therapy, in particular hormonal therapy, who has tried many of these combinations. We have standard of care chemotherapy, if you've not had it before, with either docetaxel or a drug called cabazitaxel. But more recently, we've been looking at a radioligand therapy, which is a targeted radioactive therapy for patients whose cancer express on their surface a molecule called PSMA, prostate-specific membrane antigen. And this, again, is not for every patient, but certainly represents an alternative for patients who may have failed prior treatment with chemotherapy. Also keep in mind that from diagnosis and points beyond, we recommend very strongly that patients undergo genomic profiling. Why? Because if we find a genetic alteration, there are drugs that will target that alteration. So for patients who have a mutation in what's called the BRCA gene, BRCA1 or 2, BRCA stands for breast cancer, these genes are very sensitive to a class of drugs called PARP inhibitors, P-A-R-P. It stands for phosphoadenosyl riboxyl phosphatase, and essentially it inhibits the cell's ability to repair the DNA once it's broken. In other words, if your cancer cell has broken DNA, is getting ready to die, but there's something in the cell that repairs it, you just don't want that to happen. So all of these are there and within the appropriate clinical setting are very, very helpful to you. Now, what about, you know, how do we deal with everything? And, you know, people get a little confused because they start to talk about needing help very early on or even later on in the disease. And I always tell people when they come through the clinic, you know, they should really be hooked up with either what we call palliative or supportive care. They're roughly the same. Maybe there's some nuances, but it really refers to an interdisciplinary medical care approach where we're really trying to optimize quality of life and reduce suffering. So it may very well be that you hook up with these people. Maybe you have a broken toenail one day and you don't know who to turn to. There are people there who are going to help you. If you have back pain that has absolutely nothing to do with your cancer, these people in supportive care will say, you know what? How about if we make a referral to our anesthesia pain people and they can take care of your slip disc? So it's a way of making sure that if you have problems, whether they're cancer related or not, there is someone that you can always turn to. And that includes radiologists and radiation doctors, physiatrists, which are rehabilitation people. So it is never too late to start that. Now, you know, we're all challenged about what is the best way that we should deal with problems that come from treatments and side effects from treatments. And among the most common that we often see is something known as neuropathy or numbness and tingling, either in fingers or toes. Now, patients who have longstanding diabetes are faced with this all the time. But what if your chemotherapy causes it? Well, then here, too, we have mechanisms in play. There are medications that can be used. And very often, our colleagues, both in neurology and physiatry or rehabilitation medicine, provide help in dealing with it, whether it's injections or oral medications or certain exercises that might be helpful. The same is true for pain management. I mean, most institutions these days have an anesthesia pain service where they can actually inject an area that's creating pain. They deal with slip discs. They deal with loss of height of vertebrae, and there are ways of dealing with it. But more importantly, there are services, in particular the pain service, that will deal with the actual pain that a patient may have and are the ones who oversee the administration of narcotic analgesics. This is just an introduction to tell you really what is out there. I encourage all patients that when they do come to the doctor for the first time to ask about supportive care services, what's available to help them. And, of course, never be afraid to ask questions. I always tell people come in with a list or send it via the portal so we know what we want to talk about, because every time somebody comes into the doctor, they forget exactly what they started out to discuss. So I encourage all of you, if you have questions today, I know we'll be more than delighted to help, but always feel free to ask a question. You can never go wrong and never feel embarrassed about that. So with that very brief introduction, thank you so much, and back to you, Dr. Messner.
Oh, thank you so much, Dr. Slovin. That was just a wonderful presentation, really stellar, and you actually set the tone for today's program. You gave a lot of information, and I know there'll be a lot of questions for you during the Q&A, so thank you so much. And our next speaker is Dr. Andrew Roth. And Dr. Roth is emeritus attending psychiatry, Memorial Sloan Kettering, Memorial Hospital for Cancer and Allied Diseases, Department of Psychiatry and Behavioral Sciences, professor emeritus of clinical psychiatry, Weill Cornell Medical College. And Dr. Roth will be addressing deciding to become a caregiver, the unique stresses and rewards of caregiving, and managing family, friends, partners, and traditions. It really is my great pleasure to turn this program over to my esteemed colleague, Dr. Roth.
Good afternoon. Thank you for that introduction. I want to thank Dr. Messner for this invitation to be part of this expert panel. I'm going to focus on three issues related to being a caregiver of someone with metastatic prostate cancer that I hope will help you and your partner cope with this experience a little bit easier. There's no clear point when anyone decides to become a caregiver. It's difficult and challenging to watch a loved one go through the physical and emotional changes related to a diagnosis of metastatic prostate cancer, to the treatment of that cancer, and to the possible side effects of treatment, all of which seem unpredictable. Couples often go through these life detours and potential deviations to their hoped-for life trajectories with trepidation. There is no caregiver contract to be signed other than the commitment a couple has made to their relationship. Responsibilities of a caregiver may vary from changing your day-to-day lives to dealing with your lives that feel like they've gone topsy-turvy and perhaps feeling completely defined by the cancer. You may want to be a cheerleader when fear, anxiety, sadness, and anger arise, and yet that may be the last thing that your partner wants. Trying to keep a realistic, positive attitude is not easy. It may be useful to validate your partner's frustrations and your own, while also trying to see the glass as half full. But don't expect your attitude to be stable and consistent. You need to take a breath, try to take your emotional pulse, and start again if needed. Often family and friends can be a great support, but as you know, sometimes they can make things a bit more difficult. See which supports help you most. You'll learn a lot as a caregiver, whether you want to or not. You'll wear many hats, have many roles, and manage many responsibilities. Sometimes as a caregiver, you'll be a troubleshooter to identify whether your partner's challenges are related to the cancer. You may try to manage them or help him manage them. You may try to help both of you adjust to a different quality of life. You may be an unofficial nurse or nurse's aide who helps manage pain or fatigue or other symptoms. You may have secretarial duties for medical and social appointments. You may have bookkeeping and scheduling responsibilities, keeping track of appointments, travel accommodations, medications, medical bills, and monitoring trends for symptom improvement or worsening, and observing for side effects to all treatments. You may be the one asking the oncology team, how will we know if he's getting better or worse? And then what do we do? One of the more important roles you may have is as an advocate for your partner who may not recognize some problems or may not want to let the medical team know about those problems, as he may feel they're a harbinger of worse things to come or of treatment to be stopped or even embarrassing. Performing these roles can be quite rewarding, as they may improve your partner's quality of life, yet at times can also be quite frustrating. Additional roles that you may acquire may include being a physical trainer, a nutritionist, a physician's assistant, a social worker, and even a psychiatrist as well. Most of these, of course, unprofessionally, most of these will be appreciated by medical teams, but some not. And some may not get sufficient positive feedback from your partner who may be suffering too much to show more gratitude and appreciation. You don't get a diploma or an award for all this education, and you're not going to put it on your resume, although maybe you'll write a book. But the potential rewards of a better quality of life, physically, emotionally, and spiritually for you and your partner may be infinite and incalculable. Many couples and families are closer together as life winds down. There may be sadness and worry, but often there's an appreciation for life and beauty and connection with others that may not have been as present in the past. If you have family or friends, you'll be role modeling and teaching them how to deal with one of life's most difficult challenges. It's not to say that you'll feel like a superwoman or a superman. However, even amid challenges, you can show others how to deal better with difficult life situations. Some caregivers help family and friends to understand mortality better or to understand how to live in a healthier manner. Perhaps you can encourage your partner, family, and friends to participate in projects like life narratives, memoirs, collages, or photo albums, which can help your partner leave a life legacy that is meaningful and long-lasting. As a scheduler, you'll be able to make sure your partner can see family and friends for specific amounts of time if he does not get too exhausted. And when he doesn't want to socialize, you can help him moderate activities that allow him to have pleasure and connection to others. For instance, listening to music, attending part of a concert, seeing grandchildren for short periods of time. You will help your partner role model the importance of participating in life even when he doesn't feel great. Birthdays and anniversaries and holidays may bring on many emotions like happiness and sadness at the same time. You and your partner may wonder if this will be the last year to celebrate those occasions. The recognition of the finality of life, though perhaps frightening, can also turn up the volume on appreciation of what is meaningful in your lives right now. Some couples feel they grow spiritually, which gives them the strength and courage to deal with life better, while others become angry with God for this predicament and remain bitter. If you feel overwhelmed, know that this is common. You're not alone, though you may feel alone, embarrassed, or weak. Discuss this with the oncology team. Get support from a social worker, a chaplain, your church, mosque, or synagogue, from a psychologist or a psychiatrist if needed. Psychotherapy or even psychiatric medications may be helpful for one or both of you, either as a couple or individually, to figure out how to better manage the intrusive and unwanted changes in your life prostate cancer may bring. A colleague of mine, Allison Applebaum, recently published a book on caregiving that may be helpful. It's called Stand By Me, about her experience of being a caregiver for her father. Thank you for your attention. Back to you, Colin.
Oh, thank you so much, Dr. Roth. That was just a wonderful presentation, and I think really touched a lot of people's, gave people so much information about the caregiving role and about some of the challenges and rewards of caregiving. So I know there'll be lots of questions for you during the Q&A, and I think we're very happy that you're able to speak on today's program. It's just a wonderful presentation. Thank you. And our next speaker is Ms. Nina Kapoor Hinson, and Ms. Hinson is a supportive care nurse practitioner, advanced practice provider manager, supportive care, geriatric oncology, and integrative medicine, Memorial Sloan Kettering Cancer Center. And Ms. Kapoor Hinson will be addressing key questions to ask your healthcare team about quality of life concerns and guidelines to prepare for telehealth, telemedicine appointments, including technology, prepared list of questions, and discussion of open notes. It's my great pleasure to turn this program over to my esteemed colleague, Ms. Kapoor Hinson.
Thank you, Dr. Messner, and thank you to Dr. Roth and Dr. Sullivan for all the great information you provided. I hope this information will help build on some of that. So when we think of metastatic prostate cancer, we often think about asking our care team about treatments, and we may neglect to ask about quality of life issues. We may think that there aren't solutions, but that just isn't true. Prostate cancer and its treatment can be associated with significant quality of life issues, including urinary and bowel function, sexual function and reproductive health, fatigue, performance in physical and social roles, pain, and mood changes like anxiety and depression. Caregiving for people with prostate cancer also has challenges that hinder one's ability to effectively provide care and diminish the caregiver's quality of life. There are several interventions and resources available to mitigate quality of life issues, and it's important to ask the questions in order to get this helpful information. Designate one person to communicate with the healthcare team when possible, and ensure that whenever possible, the patient communicates their experiences directly with healthcare providers. It's helpful to prepare a list of questions or concerns prior to a visit in order to make the most of your visit time, and ask providers the best way to contact them in case additional concerns arise after your visit. Here's a list of questions that you can consider asking your care team. First, to learn more about the disease itself, ask what they can tell you about the type of prostate cancer your family member or friend has, and what symptoms can you expect from the cancer itself. What are the risks and benefits of treatment? What are the side effects of cancer treatments? And can you do anything to prevent these effects? If experiencing the side effects, ask about how you can care for your family member or friend when they're at home. Ask how long it will take for your family member or friend to recover from a specific treatment. If you're tasked with doing certain medical or nursing interventions at home, ask how you do those things. For example, how do I give an injection? Or how do I change a dressing on a wound? You can also ask about complementary and alternative therapies to stay well. What can I do to keep my loved one healthy through nutrition and physical activity? Do I need to check with you before my family member or friend uses a complementary or alternative therapy? And what complementary therapies can be useful? Also ask about your own well-being. What are the best ways that I can maintain my health and well-being while caregiving? What are some ways we can deal with what we are feeling? And what are some local resources that I can turn to? Interdisciplinary care team members can assist in providing answers to these questions and resources that you may not have been aware of. So next, I'll shift to telehealth and telemedicine appointments. So telehealth is a broad term for healthcare that is delivered via a multitude of electronic platforms. However, for this talk, I'll be referring to telehealth as it refers to patient visits that are conducted over the telephone or video teleconferencing. Telehealth is a resource whose use really accelerated and improved patient access during the COVID-19 pandemic, and it has demonstrated utility in oncology care. Patient access to new visits, routine follow-ups, research, counseling, et cetera, were all improved with telehealth. Patients and or caregivers can join visits even when separated by distance from their providers and or each other. Studies have observed improvements in quality of life, symptom management, after hospitalization care, and educational support because of this modality. To prepare for a successful telehealth appointment, the following should be considered. Does the patient and or caregiver have access to the appropriate technology and broadband internet connection to complete the visit? Does the patient or caregiver have knowledge of how to participate in the visit, and are they willing to participate in a telehealth appointment? If an in-person visit is preferred, that should be allowed for. It's also important to consider whether state and federal regulations, along with provider licensing, allows for that telehealth visit to occur, as that may impact the ability to utilize this modality. Most importantly, can the problem at hand be addressed adequately over a telehealth visit? Or is an in-person evaluation really recommended and required? This is really important because we don't want to delay a patient from getting the appropriate type of care that they need. And then also very important to consider is, does the patient have hearing, visual, or cognitive impairments that would make the telehealth appointment a less than optimal or inappropriate platform for that particular encounter? Once a telehealth visit is determined to be appropriate, that telehealth visit is conducted similarly to an in-person encounter. The provider will go through an assessment, conduct an exam, answer questions, order tests and prescriptions if needed. Telehealth visits are also submitted through insurance for billing like in-person visits. And lastly, I'll talk with you a little bit about Open Notes. So Open Notes is a very useful resource to better understand one's medical care. It is an international movement advocating for greater transparency in healthcare. After a visit, healthcare providers summarize relevant information into a note. When these notes are shared with you, it becomes an open note, and many organizations will also provide open access to test results for patients and caregivers should patients allow for that. When you read clinical notes, you are better able to prepare questions for the provider. You're able to have more productive discussions about your loved one's care. You're more likely to come to an agreement about treatment planning with the provider, and you are able to have a better understanding of health conditions, better remember the care plan, and feel more in control of your loved one's health, and they're able to feel more in control of their health. Research shows that the quality and safety of patient care improves when providers offer patients and families ready access to these clinical notes. It's important to remember that a person's medical record is private, though they often choose to share this information with caregivers to help manage healthcare activities, advocate for patient safety, navigate the healthcare system, respond to crises, and navigate language and technical barriers. So in order to do this, the patient can request shared or proxy access for the caregiver to allow them to access this information. And I'll turn back over to you, Dr. Messner. Thank you for this opportunity.
Oh, thank you so much, Ms. Kapoor Hansen. That was just a wonderful presentation, lots of information for people. And I know there'll be lots of questions for you during the Q&A, just a stellar presentation. Thank you. Wonderful to have you on this program today. Thank you. And our next speaker is Ms. Dina Smith. And Ms. Smith is the Caregiver Program Coordinator at Cancer Care. She's an oncology social worker. And she will be discussing long-distance caregiving, self-care, and stress management recommendations to manage the stress of caregiving. And we'll also be addressing Cancer Care's free programs and services, and our Hope Line and website as well information. So it's really my pleasure now to turn this program over to my esteemed colleague, Ms. Smith.
Thank you, Dr. Messner. Thank you, everyone, for being here today. So I want to start off by mentioning that caregiving can look, feel, and mean different things for different people. So there are short-distance caregivers, maybe you live in the same household or in the same town as your loved one, but there are also long-distance caregivers, such as those who live across town, across the state, or even across the country. You may be a child to your loved one who's battling cancer, a spouse, or even a parent to your loved one who's battling cancer. There's also emotional caregiving, meaning perhaps you lend a shoulder for your loved one to cry on, or an ear for them to vent. Or perhaps you more so provide practical caregiving, such as transporting your loved one to and from doctor's appointments, or organizing all of their medications. But no matter how you identify, there's no right or wrong way to be a caregiver, and remember that any effort that you are putting into the caregiving process is absolutely more than enough. So, of course, there's, each type of caregiving comes with its own stressors. So your relationship with your loved one may change, your daily responsibilities or priorities may change, annual traditions and get-togethers may look different. Or perhaps you may experience symptoms of burnout, fatigue, sleep changes, weight or appetite fluctuations, sadness, loneliness, anxiousness. These are all common signs of burnout. But remember, there are so many ways in which you can alleviate burnout or even prevent burnout from happening. So number one, carve out time for yourself each and every day, and if not every day, at least once a week. I always challenge caregivers by considering, is there even a 5-minute window in your day where you can just be by yourself, do something for yourself? Let's start at 5 minutes a day and see how we can increase it from there. Be prepared and organized as well. Ask the oncologist or nurse practitioner questions, write down appointments, reach out to friends and family members for assistance. Make sure that you're prepared and you're organized so that nothing gets lost. In addition, exercise and eat healthy. If you are not taking care of yourself, you're not going to be able to take care of your loved one. So it's important to keep your body healthy and focused. Seek counseling if that is what encourages you to be a better caregiver. Maybe, for instance, you need an objective opinion, or maybe you just need to vent to someone. Counseling is an excellent area in order to do these things. In addition, I always encourage caregivers to say yes to themselves and say no to others. Prioritize yourself. This is not a selfish act. How can you recharge your loved one's battery if you do not recharge your own, figuratively? And of course, practice meditative exercises. There are so many meditative exercises out there, particularly for beginners, that are only for even 3 minutes long. For instance, there's box breathing, such as inhaling through your nose, out through your mouth, and holding the breath for a few seconds. You can find a script about this on YouTube or any other meditation-focused website. There are also other meditation exercises, such as the body scan or guided imagery. Like I mentioned, definitely go on YouTube or any other meditation-focused website or app. Additionally, considering how much information you want to share with your family and friends is yet another form of self-care, and it can alleviate stress. Set boundaries. You and your loved one may want to disclose the diagnosis to only a few people and ask them to respect that, and that this information is to remain confidential and private. Or perhaps you as a caregiver need as much help as possible, in which case setting up help through online platforms such as My Cancer Circle or Lots of Helping Hands or Meal Train could unite your friends and family to build a supportive and helpful community. And for, of course, you and your loved one. I also encourage caregivers to think about what brings them even the slightest bit of joy. I know that with the holidays coming up, this can be a particular time of year that's filled with joy, but caregiving for a loved one may surface more stress than joy. Sometimes caregivers will note that traditions that they used to experience can no longer happen because of their loved one's cancer diagnosis. I often challenge this by asking caregivers to consider how they could maintain the tradition. Perhaps something needs to be done virtually rather than in person. Or perhaps maybe someone else can, for instance, put up the holiday lights rather than your loved one. Another example is if you and your family take an annual trip to the beach, for instance, or to another family member's house. Perhaps instead of flying, could you drive or even take a train so that your loved one can walk around, get water whenever they need, and go to the bathroom whenever they need? If decorating for a holiday was also something that you and your loved one look forward to, as I mentioned, try to find someone else who can put up those decorations, or maybe see if a new tradition can be made. Maybe there are different, easier decorations to be put up. And of course, if you and your loved one are unsure about any activity, never hesitate to ask the medical team for their input. You may be surprised, as they could tell you that certain activities are, in fact, safe and even encouraged. Lastly, I also want to take the time to acknowledge that long-distance caregiving can be as, if not more, difficult than short-distance caregiving. You may not know how exactly to help your loved one. You could experience guilt for not being physically present. You may not be familiar with the local resources available to your loved one, and you may experience burnout symptoms, which are even valid for a long-distance caregiver, and oftentimes does happen. But there are so many ways in which you can still help as a long-distance caregiver. For instance, set up care for your loved one through those online platforms like My Cancer Circle, Lots of Helping Hands, Meal Train, etc. Phone in when your loved one goes to a doctor's appointment. Research and set up practical and emotional resources for your loved one. And set up check-ins via FaceTime, text, and phone call. Remember, all forms of caregiving aren't easy, so be patient with yourself. Lastly, honor the sacrifice that you have made for your loved one and reflect upon how your values may have changed or stayed the same over time. Finally, as the Caregiver Program Coordinator at Cancer Care, I want to mention that we here at Cancer Care are always here for you whenever you need. We provide lots of different services and resources, such as limited financial assistance, counseling for New York and New Jersey patients, online typing-based support groups for people nationwide, community-based programs, educational and wellness workshops, resource navigation, educational material, and last but not least, information about other cancer-based organizations. The number to call if you would like to learn more about cancer care resources is 1-800-813-4673. And with that, I will turn it back to Dr. Messner.
Oh, thank you so much, Ms. Smith. That was just a wonderful presentation, and I think a lot of really helpful resources for our participants. We will, all of you will be getting a SurveyMonkey evaluation probably at the beginning of next week, and in that evaluation we'll include all the resources that were mentioned during the program. I'll probably add a few extras as well. So if you are trying really hard to write all that information down, you'll be getting it in the SurveyMonkey evaluation. So although it is an evaluation, it'll also include lots of resources for you in addition to the cancer care resources as well. And now we have time, plenty of time, for questions for our panel of experts. And I'm going to ask Rob to explain to you how to queue up the questions. I'm going to try as many questions as possible. Rob?
Thank you. Ladies and gentlemen, at this time we will take questions from the web only. You may submit questions by clicking Ask a Question.
This is a question for Dr. Roth. Do you recommend any specific exercises or activities to help get my dad back into the swing of things after treatment? He was pretty active before, but often fights fatigue, so we're trying to get him back on track with exercise despite his lack of energy.
Well, that's a great question. I think on the one hand, you might want to find out from the oncology team or a physical therapist what your dad can do. But also, I've always found good success with something is better than nothing, especially people who've been active and they get very frustrated that they can't go running anymore, they can't play golf anymore, they don't feel like it. And so getting them even to walk up and down the block, sometimes even with a walker, if that's how they're walking, it may feel like, what's the point? Except any kind of physical exercise, I think, will be very important for their physical health, but also for their emotional health. And I think it gives you, as the caregiver, something to encourage them to do, but not necessarily to push. And if there is so much resistance, then I think talking with the oncology team or perhaps a therapist on how to help encourage your dad to do a little bit more will be very helpful for you and for him.
Well, thank you very much. Excellent. And a question for Dr. Slovin. How can I help my loved one prepare a list of questions before his appointments? I know he wants to ask his oncologist questions, but does not speak up during meetings. Do you have any pointers just to get the conversation going?
Well, I think you've heard, that's a great question, and I think you've heard some approaches today. There are some books that have been published. The American Cancer Society has a few pamphlets, as does Cancer Care, in terms of, and the Prostate Cancer Foundation, about questions to ask doctors. The fact that you're even asking at this point means that you probably have some level of understanding. And again, it really depends where we are in the disease. If this is somebody who's newly diagnosed, it's always important to know how aggressive is the cancer under the microscope? Can surgery or radiation be appropriate? And what are the expectations and the pros and cons of each treatment? If this is something whereby the patient is already on treatment but his disease is progressing, it's perfectly fine to say, okay, what are our next steps? You don't have to be specific, but what are our next steps? I see that my PSA has gone up. What do we do now? And usually that leads to a whole open discussion about different treatments and how to proceed. It is very anxiety provoking to go to see your doctor. I can't tell you the number of people whose blood pressure, as soon as they see my white coat, just goes zooming up. But if you have, if your dad has questions, even now while you're sitting in the kitchen over a cup of coffee, write them down for him and just remind him when he goes into the doctor's office, okay, this is what you and I discuss, and these are the questions that you find to be the most concerning for you. Please feel free to ask the doctor. Really, it's okay to interrupt a doctor and say, you know, doc, these things are really bothering me. Can I give you the question? Or to make life a little easier, many doctors these days have a fax machine or a portal system if you're at a large university. And those questions, if he formulates them with you, for example, can be sent into the portal so that the doctor is aware these questions are important. I mean, I have patients who send me long lists of questions, which I bring to clinic, and I don't even wait for an introduction. I start in and discuss all these questions at the get-go to make the patient feel a little bit more at home and know that they're getting the attention that they have requested. So either way, you have opportunity to ask those questions. So thank you for this important area of discussion. Thank you, Carolyn.
Excellent. Thank you so much, Dr. Sullivan. Wonderful question, wonderful response from you. A question for Ms. Kapoor Hansen. Are there recommended remedies for issues with sleeping? My husband and I have not been sleeping well since his treatment started. I like to stay awake with him as his caregiver, but I end up losing hours of sleep. I want to be there for him as much as possible, but recognize I need to take care of myself too. Ms. Kapoor Hansen, could you comment on this one?
Sure, that's a wonderful question, and really such a distressing symptom when your loved one can't sleep and you as a result can't sleep, right? Because sleep is truly restorative and helps you function better during the day and impacts your energy levels during the day. So it's really important to understand the reason that your loved one can't sleep, right? And so if it's a physical symptom, maybe it's pain, maybe it's waking up multiple times a night to go to the bathroom, maybe it's, you know, because they're resting too much during the day. It's important to understand what could be contributing to this before, you know, you can find a solution to it. So going back to the oncology team and highlighting it as really an important issue that's going on, so that way they can kind of understand the reason for it and address that reason, whether it's, you know, themselves or referring you to a specialist to talk about interventions, maybe a palliative care specialist or a psychiatrist to help with this. There are a lot of different interventions that that can be helpful. In general, for insomnia, a couple of things that I can just, you know, throw out there is, you know, if your loved one's taking or resting, taking a nap or resting too close to bedtime, that often will impact their ability to sleep and quality of sleep. So we really recommend not napping or resting too close to bedtime. And then, you know, physical activity as able or as allowed by the medical team is also helpful, right? So being active during the day can help you have a more restful sleep at night. But beyond that, it would really be crucial to understand the reason for it. There are a lot of interventions that can help.
Excellent. Thank you so much. So this is for Ms. Smith. Are there specific resources for those seeking respite care? What would be the best place to start looking for a young adult caregiver?
Absolutely. So There are a couple of different ones that I mentioned when I was speaking. So one of them is called My Cancer Circle, and the other one is called Lots of Helping Hands. And they actually might be partnering with one another now. But basically, so what is respite care? Respite care is finding someone to take care of your loved one while you get a break. So if you want your loved one to be cared for by a trusted family member or friend, that's the place to set it up. So you set up your private profile. You invite particular friends and families to have access to that profile so they can see exactly what's going on with your loved one, any treatment updates, diagnosis updates, et cetera. And then on there, you can post different things that are needed. So maybe you can't take your loved one to chemotherapy, so can someone else sign up? Or even maybe you and your loved one, maybe you have a spouse that has cancer and you guys have kids. Who can care for the kids this night while your loved one is resting? So those are just a couple of online platforms that you can utilize to find respite care. But another way to find respite care is to hire a home health aide. That's what they're there for. It kind of depends on what your loved one's insurance will cover or what you're willing to pay out of pocket. But this is another great opportunity to have respite care, professional respite care even, while you are out of the house or even in the house doing other activities.
Excellent. Thank you so much. And if a question from one of our participants, I'll address. This information is so great, I worry that I am missing the specific names of what's being discussed. So I should let all of our participants know, but thank you for asking this question, is that all of these programs will become a podcast. And the podcasts have closed caption. So that you'll be able to see everything spelled out in addition to hearing the program again. And the podcasts run for at least a year. It takes about a year to put them up on their website, and many people find them very, very helpful, particularly because of the closed caption. Everything is spelled out for you so that you can listen and also read at the same time. So I hope that will be helpful not only to our caller, but to each of you on the call today. And just remember, those podcasts are up 24 hours a day, 7 days a week for a year. So that for this particular program, but for every program we do, that's true. So please, you can share the information with others if you'd like, but it's available to everyone. And now we would like to have our speakers provide takeaways. So I'm going to start with Dr. Slovin. Just a takeaway, a minute or two takeaway that you'd like people to have.
Thank you, Dr. Messner. Number one, thank you all for joining us today. I think we learned as much as you learned from us with some of these great questions. So two takeaways. Number one, never be afraid to ask a doctor a question. If people go in there and they get the deer in the headlight look when they see a doctor, it's important to bring somebody with you because four ears are better than two ears. And it's always helpful to have people listen. I did have one episode where I had the patient, the caregiver, and myself, and it's amazing how we all heard different things. And so that's scary. So bring a pad, bring a piece of paper. If the doctor is speaking too fast, please say to the doctor, "Doctor, would you mind spelling that?" You know, any of us will do that. We're not on the high totem pole where we won't spell a drug for you or give you what we call fact cards about a drug to explain the drug in addition to what we've discussed with you. So please, number one, don't be shy. The other takeaway is very early on, as soon as you're diagnosed and you're having your first meeting, ask what supportive services are there. As I mentioned to you, it's really an interdisciplinary medical care, and it really is to optimize keeping you well and feeling well, independent of your cancer. Somebody might be feeling blue in some way and saying, you know, I'm getting these very bad thoughts. We haven't even started anything yet, and I'm feeling bad. You reach out to the supportive care service, and they'll put you in touch with somebody, a therapist like Dr. Roth, who will sit down and talk to you and find out what it is that's troubling you. Is it mainly an adjustment disorder because your life is going to be changed to a small or a large degree. So we have these services, and please avail yourselves of them. They really will help you. And the one thing that it reinforces is that you are not alone in your journey for the cancer. So thanks very much, Carolyn.
Oh, thank you so much, Susan. That's wonderful, just a wonderful takeaway. And Dr. Ra?
Yeah, thank you. I think this has been a very educational panel for me. I want folks to remember that very few people come to the job of caregiving with sufficient experience. Yet this may be the most challenging of jobs that they ever have, and it's not one that they ever really interviewed for. Be kind to yourself and allow that there may be a long learning curve, and maybe multiple long learning curves. There may be times when you feel helpless, alone, or not knowing what to do, but the time you spend with your loved one and taking on the joint challenge of dealing with the difficulties of metastatic prostate cancer together will go a long way to raising the spirits of your loved one with cancer as well as your own spirits, and hopefully have both of you feeling more purpose, meaning, and fulfillment and love in your lives. Please ask for help when needed. Thank you.
Oh, thank you so much, Dr. Roth. Could you let people know the name of the book that Allison Applebaum just wrote, the new book that she's just put out, so people can, if they want to access it, they could?
It's called Stand By Me. It's recently published. I don't really want to put a plug in for my own book, but there is a book that I wrote about managing prostate cancer that is specific for patients and for family and friends. And a lot of the questions that were brought up today are talked about in the book in case someone would find that helpful.
And the name of the book is, Dr. Roll?
Managing Prostate Cancer, A Guide for Living
Excellent.
Better.
Excellent. Okay. So those are nice resources to have. Thank you so much. And thank you. And thank you for the takeaways. And Ms. Nina Kapoor-Hansen?
So I'll just, end with similar to my colleagues. Caregiving can feel like and really is a full-time job. And I want to empower all of you to ask for help. We've come such a long way in improving quality of life for patients and caregivers, and we have so many resources that it's hard to know where to start. There are no silly questions, and you won't know what resources are out there and how your life can be different unless you ask. And so I just want to empower all of you to ask if there's anything that's on your mind. If anything, just even asking the question and getting it off your shoulders can be helpful as well.
Oh, thank you so much. Excellent. And Ms. Smith, do you want to add takeaways?
Absolutely. Yeah, so just remember that no matter what type of caregiver you are, how much you're caregiving, you're already doing more than enough. And remember that, burnout is normal in caregiving, and we always try to alleviate it or even prevent it, but, it's going to happen. It probably is, but I'm hoping that today the tools that I mentioned and everyone else mentioned will be beneficial and will set you up for success. Remember, with the holidays coming up, to find that little area of joy in your life, in your loved one's life, just a little something, whether it's the same as before, whether it's different to these days, I'm sure that you can think of something new or something that has been maybe better for you and your loved one, more doable, I should say, that will bring you guys some joy in your life. And last but not least, please reach out to Cancer Care if you have any questions, if you need any resources or services. We are happy to help.
Oh, thank you so much. Thank you. And I want to thank all of our speakers, and I particularly want to thank our participants, really great questions. And I want to thank our speakers for really doing great presentations, but also for working with those who asked questions with wonderful answers for them as well. Now, I do want to comment on those who asked a question and those who have a question yet in queue, because we have so many people on the call and so many questions that we couldn't take all of them. So for those of you who asked a question, and for those of you who are still in queue with a question you'd like to ask, please both of you, both those who asked the question and those who have a question in queue, please go back to your treating healthcare team. They obviously know you the best. They have their medical, your medical records in front of them. And you've had some practice now in asking questions and hearing what answers are. And so ask your questions and ask them over and over again until you get an answer that is helpful to you. So the healthcare team can really work with you on helping you to resolve any questions you might have. And also, one thing I do want to mention to all of you as a takeaway is that it seems that weekends, evenings, and holidays often is a difficult time to reach your physician. So you may want to find out ahead of time who is available and who to call on evenings, weekends, and holidays. It just seems that those during the day, usually when you call an office, someone will get back to you. But in the evening, and things always seem to happen, evening, weekends, and holidays, be sure to ask them, especially we have a lot of holidays coming up, so be sure to ask that question. Again, I want to thank you all for your participation today. This has been a phenomenal call, I must say, and we will be offering more calls like this going forward. Thank you all.
Ladies and gentlemen, thank you for your participation. This concludes the workshop, and you may now disconnect. Everyone, have a great day.